As this episode is posting, today is April 15th, which is the 109th anniversary of the Titanic disaster. I've been absolutely obsessed with the Titanic since I was about 3 or 4 years old, and plenty of people have asked me why over the years. So I invited my friend Rob Hart to come on the show so we can compare our personal Titanic stories.
This is the Greatest Story Ever podcast.
There comes a time when all the cosmic tumblers have clicked into place and the universe opens itself up for a few seconds to show you what's possible.
With Keith Conrad.
You know, everything is not an anecdote. You have to discriminate. Here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
One person with a whale of a tale to tell is Alexander White from Australia. Alexander and his wife received a bit of a fright when they discovered a rare venomous snake in a bag of supermarket lettuce. It was about 20 centimeters long and appeared to have been sleeping peacefully in said lettuce in the supermarket's refrigerated grocery cabinet until White decided to pick it up, carried it around the store, and then, you know, the 10-minute bicycle ride home. It woke the little guy up. It's a good thing they were looking at their salad before they ate it. Just two observations here. First, this verifies what I've long said, that salads will kill you. You don't hear about snakes hiding in steaks, although that sounds like a future Samuel L. Jackson movie, actually. Second, why would anyone live in Australia? Literally everything is trying to kill you, even the salads.
You don't win friends with salad.
You don't win friends with salad. You don't win friends with salad.
You don't win friends with salad.
You don't win friends with salad.
You don't win friends with salad.
You don't win friends with salad.
You don't win friends with salad.
You don't win friends with salad.
Of course, you'd already be well aware of Alexander's story if past you had visited my website, keithconradmedia.com, and signed up for my free email newsletter, The News Side Quest. Every weekday, you'll get a collection of entertaining, heartwarming, and thought-provoking stories, along with my snarky commentary and a few gifts. So present you should do future you a favor and sign up at keithconradmedia.com today. My guest this week is Rob Hart. Thanks so much for joining me again.
A pleasure, as always.
You're actually the very first repeat guest in the history of the Greatest Story Ever podcast. I don't know whether to congratulate you or not.
Well, this is certainly a distinction that I have worked my entire life to achieve. And really, there's nowhere else to go. Alexander wept, for there were no more lands to conquer.
Exactly. And last time we talked to you about your experience covering the Barack Obama election night win in Grant Park, which was actually a personal story. And, you know, today being April 15th, you know, when this episode actually posts, it's the anniversary of the Titanic disaster.
I was not there, and I'm not responsible.
I was about to say that's something we can't share a personal story about, but I think that you are actually probably, if anyone I've ever met, might be the only person who's more obsessed with the Titanic than I am. So I thought it would be fun to actually talk about how we each ended up with this lifelong obsession.
Yeah, first off, you find out. It's not something that people necessarily broadcast, but I have discovered over the course of my time in broadcasting that there are, you know, several colleagues who are Titanic aficionados. You are one of them.
What I've discovered is people in radio, you know, obviously not universally, but a large chunk of people who work in radio are into aviation and ships.
Yes. And I've always assumed the radio person obsession with aviation always had to do with like some kind of desire to either press small buttons or flip small switches. And, you know, you can scratch that itch either by operating a broadcasting, you know, radio control board or behind in the cockpit of an airplane. But on the Titanic side of things, though, I mean, I could tell you our mutual friend, Chris Duffy, formerly of WGN, and then my WBBM colleague, Al Rosen, former, you know, now retired engineer. Turns out he is also a big Titanic buff and has a memorabilia collection of his own. So there are more of us than you think. I mean, clearly there are a lot of us because the movie about the Titanic is still one of the most successful movies of all time. So this clearly even now, 109 years later, this story has resonance for a lot of people.
And if it was just Leonardo DiCaprio that led to the success of the Titanic, then I think his other movies would have surpassed it. So,
the thing is that we've talked about this before, where this movie comes out in 1997, late 97, and then is a phenomenon all the way until April of 1998. I mean, there has not been a movie with the legs of Titanic, I think, since then. I mean, you have like these Marvel movies that are hugely successful for a weekend or two, but Titanic lasted half a year. I mean, there you cannot find a media phenomenon like that anymore.
It obviously wasn't number one or anything like that, but I remember it was literally in theaters close to a year after it was released. Like, you know, it was big in theaters for 6 months, but it was literally actually still playing in theaters almost a year after it was released.
But the funny thing was, like, as a Titanic history buff, even then, you know, as a senior in high school, you know, I wanted to see it multiple times, but it's like you and a bunch of weepy 13-year-olds. It's like, no, I'm not. I mean, the love story is nice, but I want to see the Grand Staircase, and I want to see the dining saloon, and I want to see, you know, the Titanic as probably as accurately as it will ever be depicted on the big screen. That's what I want to see. Like, right. even when the Celine Dion video, when that was on MTV, almost, you know, ad infinitum, in throughout 1998, you know, I would always like, I want to watch this, but not because of the song, which of course was everywhere, but because they had all these, you know, special effects shots of the ship. So, I mean, I wanted to be separate and distinct from the people who were there for the soap opera. Like, I wanted to see the boiler room.
Yeah, exactly. And, I think we were both, you know, high school age when it came out. And I think to me, there was at least a slight hint of annoyance on, at least on my part, that, everybody was sort of hopping on the Titanic ship bandwagon. And I was like, I've been here the whole time.
Well, I mean, but again, if this is what gets you into the story, and if this, you know, makes you interested in the history around the ship and the history of that particular era, if it's, you know, a tiger beat desire to see Leonardo DiCaprio, if that gets you in, welcome to the party. I mean, the funny thing is, my sister was 12 years old at the time, and I think she saw Titanic 10 times, and again because of the love story. But a couple of years later, my brother was invited to a Titanic-themed dinner party at the home of a well-to-do friend in Milwaukee. And everybody had to dress up as a particular character or a passenger or a crew member on the ship. And my brother and his wife, they were Sir Cosmo and Lady Duff Gordon.
Nice.
Between my knowledge of the actual sinking and the people involved, and my sister's knowledge gleaned from seeing Titanic 20 times in the theater in 1998, we made sure they were very prepared for this dinner party. And I was actually told to stop texting them because I think the quote was, "You're becoming insufferable."
Oh, that's awesome. So going back, further into the past, for me, I remember that my dad probably sometime around, I guess it would have been 1986, brought home a VHS copy of the documentary Secrets of the Titanic.
Yeah.
And that was when I was hooked. And a funny story, years later, I was working on a morning show, and Martin Sheen came in for an interview. And he and I were just kind of chatting in the control room before he went on the air. And I mentioned that that whenever I hear his voice, I always think of two things, the movie The Final Countdown and the documentary Secrets of the Titanic. And he said, I was the first person who ever mentioned either of those.
Well, see, that's, I mean, imagine though, you're Martin Sheen and people are always asking you like, "Hey, President Bartlett," or "What about Apocalypse Now? How are your kids doing?" Like, and then you're the first person to ask him about, you know, a movie he probably hadn't thought about in decades and a narration project that probably lasted an afternoon. So I'm sure that was gratifying to him that other aspects of his career are memorable to at least one person.
Yeah, he did actually say that he remembered doing the Titanic documentary. So I thought that was kind of cool. So that was how I got into it. And I, like I said, I think it was about 86 because it was, you know, that was when the Ballard Expedition actually, you know, he went down there and visited. So it was probably late 86 or so. How did you actually become hooked on the Titanic?
Well, I mean, I think there were a couple of things. I mean, my dad was interested in the story. He had A Night to Remember. There was another book that came out in the 1960s called The Maiden Voyage, which was, you know, again, a very kind of like forensic look at the sinking. And then, you know, they found the ship in 1985. So I'm 5 years old and you're just vaguely aware of what's going on in the news. And then both of my grandparents, both grandfathers, they were National Geographic subscribers. So they find the ship in September of 85, and then the December 85 issue of National Geographic is the first big photo spread from Argo, the camera sled. And I must have looked at that until it fell apart. And then
I actually still have that here somewhere.
Yeah, it's really cool. And then there's the painting, the two-page painting of the ship sinking, and then with what attempted to be kind of a forensic reconstruction to reconcile the pictures they got from the wreck and try to, you know, piece together a narrative above and beyond what eyewitnesses were saying. And then I remember in June of 86 or July of 86, you would see these kind of ghostly images in the Chicago Tribune of what Woods Hole had released and what Alvin had taken pictures of on the decks of the Titanic. And I was sleeping over at my grandparents' house. And I remember my grandpa like handing me the front section of the Chicago Tribune just to say, look at this, you know, the submarine is down there taking pictures of the Titanic. And then after that, you had Secrets of the Titanic, which was on WTBS, the superstation. And then I think then after that, and this was on Channel 9 in Chicago, there was this syndicated show with hosted by Telly Savalas from Las Vegas, where the French expedition had retrieved.
It was actually from France. It wasn't Vegas. It was from Paris.
It was from Paris. And they were going to open up the safe, and it was like an Al Capone's vault thing. Like, is it a jewel encrusted book? Is it this, that, or the other thing? And then, you know, 2 hours later, actually the back rusted out and there's nothing in there, but thank you for watching anyway.
Yeah. That was part of the late 80s craze of, hey, let's do everything live. And it worked out about as well as Al Capone's vault.
Right. I mean, it wasn't nearly as embarrassing as Al Capone's vault, but it was kind of like, we're going to make you. But again, it was like the show was, you know, this is the Nautile, the submarine. This is the stuff they found. This is the story. You know, and this is when they were just starting to retrieve artifacts from the ship. And of course, I'm seven, so I devour that as well. And then, you know, every couple of years, new books came out. There was another one by Charles Pellegrino called Her Name Titanic, which was a really, you know, kind of a well-done narrative combined with the information that we had learned from the two Robert Ballard expeditions. And then he was the one who I think kind of, I don't know if he was the one who came up with it, but that was the first place I read it about the downblast theory, where a lot of the damage to the ship on the ocean floor was the result of the collision with the bottom. And that, you know, a lot of lifeboat davits and elements of the superstructure were peeled off by the momentum of the water traveling behind it. So I thought that was really interesting. Then the movie comes out and, you know, like anything in your life, your interest in any subject kind of, you know, ebbs and flows depending on what's going on. And there's always new information. Now we have, you know, computer recreations of the Titanic. I downloaded the Britannic patroness of the bear. What is it called? Patroness in the Mediterranean.
The I, yeah.
that, but my friend had a VR helmet, and you know, you're walking the decks of the Britannic as it looked, or as it would have looked if it was an ocean liner. And of course, it's like, this is incredible. Like, who could have imagined that this technology was possible? And of course, he kept walking into his basement wall like 5 or 6 times, but it was amazing. Like, so as life goes on, and as this event, you know, gets further and further into the rearview mirror over a century ago, you're always learning new things. And that always kind of, you know, reignites your interest in the story.
Yeah. So I was just thinking about this the other day, and which survivor has the most interesting story? And you know, there's Violet Jessop, who was actually in accidents on all three of like the sister ships, the Olympic, yeah, Titanic, and Britannic, which I always thought that was really interesting. I'm also fascinated by the fact that, you know, one of the lookouts survived and, you know, could actually tell his story. And also, like, one of the firemen, Frederick Barrett, who, like, actually saw the collision from the inside, like, saw the, you know, plates buckle and water coming in from the inside, you know, somehow, I'd love to retrace his steps, you know, that night to actually figure out how he managed to survive, because he was literally right in the middle of everything. But I think, to me, my favorite survivor is still Charles Lightoller, just because, like, he had quite a life, and like the Titanic was just part of it, because he was involved in like 4 different shipwrecks. So he was like, you know, people say you don't want to go on a trip with Tom Hanks. He was like the original,
right?
You don't want to go on a trip with. He sank a U-boat in World War I. He ended up rescuing people in Dunkirk. Like, there's a character in the movie Dunkirk that's basically based off of him. So I think he still ranks as my the most interesting survivor of the Titanic.
Because he was the most, you know, the senior ranking officer, you know, most senior officer to survive the sinking. He's interesting to me. I to the point where I actually read his memoirs. Titanic and Other Ships, and it's interesting. He's very much a man of his time, and he, unfortunately, I think, also reflects the prejudices of a man of his time. Yeah. You know, this very, you know, British superiority over all other European peoples and everyone else on Earth, and he still kind of had, you know, believed that, and this is in the 30s. That he was a sailor. Very few people understand this life or what you do, and that he was kind of above answering questions from the public. At least that's the gist that I got from reading this book. Mm-hmm. And you know, his attitude, it seemed like he felt that he was above, especially above answering questions from the American inquiry. Because there were, you know, there were 2 inquiries. There was the American inquiry with Senator William Alden Smith from Michigan. And I think they kind of, the British sailors felt they didn't have to answer to this guy. And then there was the British inquiry, which he kind of felt, you know, they had the right to question us, but still nobody understands how things go on the sea. Lightoller, of course, eventually acquits himself a lot better in World War I, and especially at Dunkirk. But Titanic wasn't necessarily his finest hour. Especially with his adherence to the rules, you know, his interpretation of women and children first, which was extremely strict. And a lot of people, you know, found themselves on the decks unnecessarily as a result.
Yeah. Standing on the decks, watching a boat that was, you know, a third full, you know, being lowered. You probably wouldn't think too highly of him at that point. You know, you mentioned the American inquiry. I think that's something that at some point I would really like to do a deep dive, no pun intended, on. Because I'm fascinated by the fact that, you know, 9/11, it took, you know, what, at least 3-4 years for there to be a Senate inquiry. And even then, it ended up being, you know, pretty controversial. They put that thing together in 3 days,
which is also remarkable, because it took, you know, several days just to get to Washington.
Right.
There's a very good book called The Other Side of the Night, which is the Titanic story as told from the perspective of the Carpathia. Mm-hmm. And it's also and from the side of the Californian, too. And it also talks about Senator Smith and where he came from. And he's this Republican senator from Michigan. He's very much in the Teddy Roosevelt trust-busting mold. He had spent a lot of his career going after railroads for safety violations. And because the Titanic, you know, the White Star Line, was under the umbrella of J.P. Morgan's International Mercantile Marine and American Trust, he felt they had, you know, jurisdiction over the accident. And so, yeah, they convened that inquiry right away in case everyone decided to sail back to England. And
They actually held it in New York, and basically, you know, they were standing at the end of the gangplank on the Carpathia saying, you know, we're going to need you to testify. And, you know, the fact that they were able to put all that together in just a couple of days, I mean, literally, I don't think the Senate could do that in 2021.
No. And then the British inquiry is interesting, too, because I think they got Shackleton, the South Pole explorer.
Yeah.
To talk about the navigating around ice, which was a thing that I'm like, oh, wait a minute, they got him? Because, you know, you read about Shackleton, you know, doing in his South Pole, and they made a movie about him, you know, his South Pole adventures. And you're like, oh, they used him as part of the Titanic inquiry.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. It would be like, you know, well, I mean, it would probably be about the same thing as, you know, in the original Challenger review board, they had, you know, they had Neil Armstrong around there. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, probably about the equivalent of something like that.
I mean, I guess you have to get as many experts as humanly possible to weigh in on this.
But and that, you know, to your point, Shackleton did know about ice. So
that, yes, he did. He knew a thing or two about ice.
So this is the 109th anniversary. Maybe we'll get together again for the 110th anniversary.
I think I mean, why not do this every year? You're always learning new stuff, and you know, now I was a little disappointed in the most latest expedition, or at least what we learned from the most latest expedition. I mean, it was really interesting to see, you know, 2 or 3 minutes of the wreck last summer of 2019 in HD. I mean, to have that perspective on the shipwreck was fascinating. I was really disappointed by the National Geographic documentary that came out because of that, because I think it kind of fell down the, you know, maybe this is just like a trend in documentary production that you have to have some kind of storyline. They're trying to find something, and I think they're trying to find a Benjamin Guggenheim's cabin for one of his descendants. Like, okay, but can we see more of the ship? And they just kept showing the same 3 minutes over and over again.
Yeah. I mean, that made a lot of news because, you know, there was, you know, they had discovered that parts of the, you know, the ship weren't in very good shape. But considering the fact that it had been over a decade since anybody had been down there, I was actually kind of surprised at how good a shape the ship is in. And, you know, I actually think it'll probably be around in its current condition for a while. Although, you know, I certainly don't know anything about how ships decay in the deep sea.
Well, as some scientists have said, that, you know, Titanic's bad luck extended all the way to where it sank, because it's on the north end of the Gulf Stream current. You know, the water is a lot warmer down there than it would be at any other point in the Atlantic. So if it sank at a similar depth somewhere else in the ocean, it probably would be a lot more well-preserved than it was, which is unfortunate. But I think one of the more fascinating things that came out in the last year was that Titanic Archive website, where they took all of the wreck dive footage and kind of put it in one place for you to look at from different years. And the thing I love looking at is, I don't know if it was one of the Russian expeditions or one of the Cameron expeditions, where they went down through the D-deck. I don't know if they went down through the D-deck entryway and went up, or if they went from the grand staircase down. But they sent the robot into one of the reception rooms. And of course, the wood's all gone, but the A deck and B deck and C deck signs are still on the wall. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, provides an entirely different perspective on the wreck than all the pictures you've seen before, because that implies habitation. That implies this was a place that was designed to transport people, and that, you know, it's not just this ghostly rusted hulk. This was a place where people were, and sadly, where many of them died. And it's that kind of, or you know, signage for elevators, or sending the robot inside the Turkish bath. Like, that's the kind of stuff that's like, wow, this was, it's amazing this is still here.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, based on what we've seen, especially from the Cameron expeditions where they, you know, went pretty far into the ship, I think that if you could somehow light that up, I think it's probably like a lot more recognizable than people think, because, you know, you just can't see much down there. And I think that if you were able to take, you know, enough lights down there to light it up in, you know, a similar fashion to the way it would have been when it was actually, you know, functioning as a ship, I think you'd actually be able to pick out a lot of details that, you know, like you said, especially after the first Ballard expedition down there. I think it kind of seemed like it was just this big hunk of rust down there. And after Cameron actually explored inside it, we found out there's actually a lot left inside there.
Well, they, especially when he goes inside cabins and you could see, you know, a passenger who had their cabin fan was still plugged in, because the Titanic, a lot of passengers reported, was running really hot that night. And that's why a lot of passengers had their portholes open, because it was just really hot and stuffy in there. And so this one passenger had their cabin fan plugged in to get some air circulation, and then left it that way when they left their cabin. There was another cabin where all the furniture was thrown around, but they still had a glass in the glass holder, because they put this passenger had some brandy before they left, and there was a little bit left, and they kept it weighed down, and so it didn't float away when their cabin flooded. Like, that, mm-hmm. those little signs of habitation are absolutely fascinating.
It is. Well, Rob, thanks so much for telling your Titanic story, and I hope you'll join me again next year when we do a dramatic reading of the Senate transcripts.
That's great. I want to be the guy who asks, was it Lightoller who asked, you know, what icebergs are made out of?
That is absolutely a question you would expect for to come up in a Senate inquiry.
Well, you know, it's the Socratic method. You have to be very, very thorough.
If you think you can top two dorks chatting about the Titanic, shoot me an email at greateststoryeverpodcast@gmail.com.
Gabatron?